The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 358, recorded on August 6th, 2014.
Hello, and welcome to the 358th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 191st episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
You know, I know why you tripped up just like I did, is because we're not doing a gaming flashback. We're not doing gaming
flashback,
history.
Gaming flashback, that's what it was.
And you were going to go, and around the history, and
I'm like, somebody altered my script.
Yeah. So anyway, as some of you on Facebook noticed, we were on hiatus. And just to make a bitter story short, Jordan decided he did not want to be a part of the podcast anymore. And he's made it forcefully clear, so we're just going to have to soldier on without him. But Paul is still here.
Woohoo! Paul is back from visiting his family in New York.
Yeah. And unfortunately, he had to cut his vacation short.
Fortunately, unfortunately, whatever. I mean, I got a healthy baby niece and nephew out of the deal and a new cousin. So, I mean...
Was there a marriage?
Life could be worse.
Was there a marriage?
Yes, there was a marriage and double birth all in the same week.
Wow.
It was fantastic.
That is what I call, you know what that's like is when you're playing a video game and all of a sudden you get two one-ups at the one after the other all of a sudden. It's like, oh my goodness, I got two one-ups.
It was so considerate of my family to schedule all those things in the same week.
Anyways.
I also took a business meeting while I was there. So right. for a game called Herotopia, it's a fantastic game. I highly recommend it.
You know, I applied for Penn South. Penn South is like the apartment building I'm living in, it's not dingy. It's a step up. It's still inexpensive and still in Midtown. So I'm crossing my fingers.
Sorry, I still win.
Yeah, well, new people is better than new apartment, but trust me, I really want this. Oh, I bought a 40-inch 1080p TV for my birthday.
Ooh.
And it's funny because the TV that I had looks tiny next to it. I didn't understand the size difference until I saw them together, and it's like, oh my goodness!
No matter how big your new TV is, text from Xbox is still going to look ridiculously small on it.
No, but it's fun because you know finally I have a TV. I don't have a monitor for a TV, even though it claims to be a TV. You know, I have my TV was one of those that sometimes people put in the bathroom because it's so small and they can watch TV in the bathroom.
I don't want to know what you do in the bathroom. That sounds like a cue to move on to our next segment.
No, well, but it was my birthday, so.
Oh, well, then good for you, Jonah.
Yeah. So the question is, the other thing is that I had to send my Xbox One in for repair. Basically because it's always had a faulty Blu-ray diode, but now it's completely shut down. And, you know, we may be going discless, but I still need the discs. You know, for one thing, it's my only Blu-ray player. So.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of discless as a concept. I think it's just kind of a way to increase profits for hardware manufacturers and not give... Like, because they're going to keep the console the same price or raise it.
Yeah, but what I mean is that...
give me less things.
What I meant is that, you know, I no longer had a disc drive. So I could either play digital games or watch TV... or nothing, and I said no. I want the drive to work. Thank you very much.
Hmm.
But on the bright side, I have rehooked up my Xbox 360, and now I can use both with this new TV. And I've started playing Mass Effect 3 again. We're going to what you've been playing. So I started playing Mass Effect 3 again. I've been also playing a whole lot of damn, I forgot the name of the stupid game on Lords of Waterdeep on my iPad. So. What about you, Paul? What have you been playing?
Let's see. Most recently, I've been playing My Little Pony on iPhone. I've been playing Dungeon Keeper on
iPhone. Oh, here's your question about My Little Pony.
Oh, Kitchen Scramble released a mobile app. So that directly ties into my Facebook account.
Oh, I see.
I haven't lost my 300 levels worth of progress.
Yes, but the question is, do they add new levels in that?
Oh, yeah. Apparently, they also added a whole new bunch of levels. But, to be fair, with all of the stuff going on in the last month, I haven't really had a chance to play much.
Well, but you did get new levels for it.
I was told there are new levels.
Oh, okay. So Now, does this mean you're going to start playing it on your phone, or are you going to continue playing it on Facebook?
I might. I think I have to give it more. I think I have to give it more time on iPhone, only because my computer doesn't seem to be handling Kitchen Scramble very well lately.
Okay. Well, the other rumor has it, or at least you announced it on Facebook, that you went to a Brony conference.
I did. I went to BronyCon 2014 in Baltimore, Maryland. Oh my God, it was amazing.
Did you take pictures of the? Because you said you were going to the costume contest.
I did. I took pictures. I haven't gotten them off my phone yet because I just got in yesterday. But yeah, the highlight. I only stayed for 2 out of the 3 days. The highlight of my weekend was for fans of the show who would know such things. It was the Grand Galloping Gala on Saturday night, and yeah, it was awesome. It was the best night ever. And a really hot boy asked me to dance, which was awesome.
Yes, but was he in a Brony costume?
No, he was in a suit. It was a formal affair, dude.
Oh, okay. Wait, how can you have a costume contest with formal suits then?
It was a gala.
Oh, okay.
Costume or formal wear.
Okay. Well, you know, there's nothing hotter than someone in a suit, really.
Oh, this kid could have been wearing a paper bag.
That was later in the evening.
No, we only got to. It was. Here's the messed up part. Since we're gonna go off on this tangent because you asked, I swear to God, it was like living in Cinderella because we danced for like 10 or 15 minutes, and then the ball was
over. Did he leave behind a glass sneaker?
No. He gave me his email, but I was so like smitten and caught up in the moment that it completely slipped my mind that I was leaving Baltimore like 2 hours later to start my travel arrangements back to LA.
Well, you still have his email.
I did. I'm waiting for him to email me back. I feel so bad. I hope he doesn't think like I snubbed him by not like finding him the next day, you know?
Yeah. On a side note, one of the things I realized when I said it was going on hiatus is that a lot of fans expressed concern and people that normally don't write in. So we have people who don't write in who
people
listen
who
to the show.
Expressed concern about me? Aww,
about the podcast.
Oh, well, if you don't care about me.
Well, you know, maybe they'll, hey, listen, write in and let us know if you're bronies like Paul here.
Oh, I know that my buddy Hans Kreb is totally hooked on the pony game. He's at level 70, and I think that's the max cap. I'm only at 60-something.
Okay.
70. He's the only one that gives me social currency, damn it.
Okay. Anyways, we're going to move on to the news since we don't have a gaming flashback and we don't have a gaming history because I was lazy and tired and, you know.
It's summer. They'll forgive us.
Yeah.
They'll appreciate a shortened podcast so that they can get back to, you know, their beach lounging too.
Anyways, Activision won't launch an EA Access style program anytime soon. And this comes to us from GameSpot. Battlefield and Mass Effect publisher Electronic Arts announced that EA... There we go. That tells you that we were on hiatus because I just completely messed it up. Battlefield and Mass Effect publisher Electronic Arts announced EA Access last week. For $5 a month or $30 a year, you receive unlimited access to The Vault, a collection of EA games, the first of which are Madden 25, FIFA 14, Peggle 2, and Battlefield 4. You also get a 10% discount on digital EA games and content, as well as access to upcoming games 5 days before everyone else. This service is currently in beta on Xbox One, with a wider release scheduled for this month. Sony said no to the service for the PlayStation 4 because the company thought it did not represent a good value for PlayStation fans. Don't expect Call of Duty and Skylanders company Activision Publishing to launch its own version of the subscription-based EA Access program anytime soon, the management said for the company yesterday. Today being August 4th, a 6th. See, I'm completely messed up. Responding to a question during the post-earnings financial call today about whether or not the company might launch such an initiative, EA Publishing CEO Eric Hirschberg outlined his company's plans. So we're always looking at new opportunities to better serve our players and our communities, and we're always evaluating new business models. And once those models are proven, we'll pursue them if we think it makes sense for our players and our business. But right now, we're continuing to focus on things we've discussed on our call, which include a wide range of business and monetization models, all of which we will deliver, we think, the best experience for our fans and a great return for our shareholders. Now, before we comment, one thing about the EA Access plan that is really good is that five-day thing. Now, here's the way it works. You demo the game, the full game, for 5 days. Now, you lose access when the game is launched, but not only do you get a 10% discount on the game if you buy it, but all the stuff you did during the during that 5 day period carries over in the save file. So,
it's essentially a paid beta.
It's a demo. It's a demo.
Or a paid pre-release.
No, it's a demo. But the thing is that you're getting it 5 days before. You're getting the full game. You're not getting a demo.
Right, but if you buy it, then you know all that data carries over. So you're basically like.
Well,
got to be the first person to play it and can be first out of the gate.
Well, you get to see
something...
if you like it, though. You know, you say, oh, yeah. I don't like this. I'm not going to get it. But the thing is, the other point is that they're going to be adding a lot of free games there. And those are just, I mean, from what I understand, when they say the vault, they mean the vault. I mean, a lot of their old.
Well, they don't
games.
Mean like the Disney vault. I mean, that's insane. You know, how video is always going back into the Disney vault. I mean, they don't mean that.
No, they mean, you know, games that are, you know, now second run and all that stuff, but full games. And, you know, I think it's really brilliant because $30 a year, that's a no-brainer. That's like
$2. It sounds like a really good value.
That's $2.50 a month. What?
Dude, that's cheaper than Netflix.
Yeah. I mean, $30 a year, I'd do it just to get, you know, 5 days access to a game. If I like it, I'll keep it. You know, I'll buy it and I'll get 10% off to boot.
It does pass the Novak value check.
Yeah. Now, the reason why Sony said they didn't want it is because they have their PSN Plus, and having something like this would kneecap them because say PSN Plus, but not the EA that you have to pay separate for, you know, and it's not first party game, it's third party games in a lot of them because the thing about Activision is really they only have 4 games, you know, they have Battlefield, Mass Effect, they have Call of Duty, Skylanders, Destiny, and something else, Battlefield maybe, and they don't have that big a library. EA has EA Sports. It has The Sims. It has Dragon Age. It has Mass Effect.
Well, while I can see that EA has a tremendous catalog, I also wouldn't really call Activision's catalog not extensive in its own right. I mean, they've got just off the top of my head. Marvel's Ultimate Alliance and the existing game rights for all Marvel properties for, you know, for the next like 20
I thought
years.
Disney now owns that. So
no, but Marvel, when it was going down, sold off bits and pieces trying to save itself before the Disney buyout. So that's like, for example, why Disney doesn't do Spider-Man movies.
We're talking
like,
about
they sold those rights.
We're talking about the major games. You know, they're tentpole games. I mean, EA is very varied, right? While Activision has explicitly said, hey, you know what? We're going to focus on these big games and not much of the smaller ones because they aren't making any new Marvel Alliance games, are they? No.
If they are, it is a closely guarded secret. But Activision's been around for like another 20, 30 years. So I wouldn't count them out just yet is my point.
Yeah, it's in beta right now on the Xbox One. And I'm... really, you know, I think I might get it simply because, you know, one thing about EA is that their sports games tend to be erratic in quality. You know, mm-hmm. Sometimes Madden is good and sometimes ugh. So this is a good way for me to see if I like the upcoming new Madden, say, without having
to get into it. I've never been into Maddens. That's just me.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, you know, I'm just saying, for instance, you know.
Yeah.
Suppose they come out with a game that you say, ooh, it looks interesting, but am I going to like it? It's a big risk, by the way, because if a game is, well, it's a big risk for them. It's not a big risk for us, because if a game is bad, you know, that game isn't going to survive. You know, it's like, no matter what, people on the service, don't bother with this game, you know, because it sucks. You know, so it's very Darwinian, you know. It's even more Darwinian because they're not releasing a demo. They're releasing the full game. So don't have the excuse, well, the demo sucked, but the full game is good.
Well, it's one of those interesting experiments that we will wait and see. But, I mean, it could be like the next Gamefly or the next, you know, Netflix you know, 10 years into the future. You know what I mean?
You know who is most likely, I think, another third-party publisher who would do this? If they see it's doing well and they say, oh, we want in on this as well, Ubisoft. Because Ubisoft is, they have their stupid Uplay, you know, and they've been trying all this stuff. If this works, you can bet that Ubisoft will dive in, and they have a lot of licenses. For instance, getting Assassin's Creed 4 for free, now that it's an older game and they're coming out with their new Assassin's Creed. You mentioned they plop, okay, if you get our subscription service, you get Assassin's Creed 4 for free. Or, you know, or
still wouldn't be much of a draw for me personally.
I know, but I'm just throwing that out. Oh, how about this for a draw? Rayman.
They lost me. What's that? Hello? Jonah? Yeah, there you are.
Oh, okay. So I'll do that again. Well, how about Rayman?
Oh, I don't know. I never got into Rayman because I always perceived it, whether correctly or not, as being really close to, you know, Ratchet and Clank or Jak and Dex.
No, it's more of a Mario clone. Really,
it's all a, right. It's well, a I mean, well, me and Mario have been together since the '80s. Gotta kind of say.
You know what? I strongly suggest getting Rayman Legends if you want your Mario fix as something new that isn't, you know, that's enough close enough to Mario that you're extremely what's it called, familiar with the mechanics, but it's actually something very new so that you're not playing the same old game, and it has a different, you know, it has a different feel to it because it's very Frenchy.
I don't know, man. I'm turning 29 in a few weeks. I got a lot less time to play games recently.
Well, that's the thing is that, you know, that's the good thing about platformers, you know? You play one world or at least one part of a world. You know, I'm going to play 1, 2. Okay, I finished that. I can go. You know, that sort of thing.
Mm.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. And this one is a little bit closer to you, Paul.
By design. Woohoo! Disney Interactive revenue up 45% in Q3. And this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. The Walt Disney Company's games business continued its rehabilitation, moving back into profitability in the third fiscal quarter. Just as a side note, Disney's financial year runs from October 1st to September 30th every year. So their third quarter just ended. In the three-month time period ended June 30th, oh, there it is, Disney's interactive segment earned $266 million in revenue, up 45% on the previous year. Operating profit for the period was $29 million, a positive swing from the $58 million loss in the same quarter last year. Disney Interactive's nine-month revenue is $937 million, a year-on-year increase of 40%. The company will close out the year back in the black, with operating profit already at $98 million after 9 months. A report released by the company mentioned the performance of the mobile games Tum Tum and Frozen Freefall, but attributed most of the growth to Disney Infinity, which started strong when it launched in September of last year and managed to retain that momentum going through 2014. The sequel, Disney Infinity 2.0, which will feature the Marvel superhero character roster, is due to release next month. However, the report also mentioned, quote, lower product development costs. Oh, really? Ouch. Ouch. Lower product development costs in achieving profitability, a significant portion of which was described as restructuring activities. Ooh. Lest we forget, that refers to 700 job cuts the company made in March.
How does it feel to be reconstructed?
And another few there. Hundred the year before. Let's just point that out.
So how did it feel to be restructured?
I was restructured back right out the door.
Anyways, so now you already.
But you know what? I couldn't be happier to hear this news, because I really do think that, you know, that a lot of the people who were working there and are working there, you know, they're working their butts off and they totally deserve it. You know, the video game division as a whole was, you know, it's one of the six branches of the Disney company, and it was the only one that wasn't profitable for the last, like, 10 years.
So, basically,
like, parks and resorts, you know, internal, all of that stuff was profitable.
So,
so good for them.
Is that basically they just started over, you know, just completely started over. Said, okay, we're going to let a lot of people go, and we're going to start from scratch and work from scratch rather than having to restructure while there are still products out there, sort of like, you know, trying to maintain what they had. Rather, they decided we're just going to sweep it away and start again new, you know?
Well, yeah, I hate to agree with you for personal reasons, but you're kind of right. I mean, they shut down Toontown and Pixie Hollow and Pirates Online, which are all fantastic products, don't get me wrong, but, you know, any game product, like, look at City of Heroes. It was another game, great game product, but, like, these things have a shelf life, and as much as we don't want to move on, you know, sometimes there has to be that tough decision. We need to harvest the crop so that we could plant new things next year.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm sad because you mentioned City of Heroes.
Oh, I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah, I know.
There's a time for all things.
You know, I still remember my character, which I made with a black outfit and a cape with bright purple lines on it, so it looked like it was glowing. That was
my character was Kid Adrenaline, and man, let me tell you, when I was thrilled that they lifted the ban on tidy whities without leggings.
What?
Yeah, like the original Robin?
Yeah, I know, but, well, Robin wore tidy greenies, for one.
Well, whatever. You know what I mean. Briefs without leggings. Originally they had a ban on that. You had to have colored leggings, and they specifically went and removed all flesh-tone legging colors. Like, the closest you could get was, like, instant tan orange. Like, it was hideous. And, it was really, like, especially when their main sell, I mean, we're getting on a tangent, especially when their main selling point was like, make the hero you wanted to make. Like, you couldn't make something in the vein of Martian Manhunter because that was against their modesty guidelines. Like, are you kidding me?
Manhunter, wait a minute. But Martian Manhunter was green and had a bandolier across his chest. That was
right. No, they had the harness, bandolier, whatever, you know, capes. They had all that stuff, but, you know, and if your goal was to play a green-skinned alien, you know, you could probably get jerry-rig close enough colors under their original system.
I think it was more
system,
copyright than...
No. Because when you asked them about it, it was, you know, they would give you some crap about the city's health violations or something like that. It's like, yeah, you're being kind of sexist and homophobic. So we're going to call you on that, and you won.
Was your guy a sidekick, or was he... Because I know you could have sidekicks, you know, you could sidekick your friends, but I'm just wondering if that was always a sidekick to someone else that wasn't there.
No, that was always a temporary condition. I just kind of liked that aesthetic.
Oh, okay.
You know, I just kind of think that, like, the original Robin aesthetic, you know, with the briefs without leggings and a shirt was kind of cool.
Okay.
Just because I'm weird that way.
Well, at least you didn't do, I'm just wearing underwear and that's it.
Well, I could have if I wanted to. That was kind of the point.
Yeah.
It, like, if you're gonna have him wear
a cape, though, you know, if you're
gonna, yeah, like like if your whole point is the highest level of avatar customization out there, if you wanted to make Captain Underpants, you should be able to go ahead and do that.
You know what? I wonder if anybody did the ambiguously gay duo.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. And this item,
now that we're back from that tangent.
The thing is that this item is basically a conclusion to something that happened for the past few years since 2011. Sony agrees to a $15 million settlement in the 2011 data breach class action suit.
Ooh, I remember this.
And this comes to us from Polygon. Sony today agreed to a $15 million preliminary settlement in a class action lawsuit over its 2011 data breach, which led to the theft of names, addresses, and possibly credit card data belonging to 77 million user accounts. The security breach took place in April 2011 and shut down Sony's PlayStation Network for several weeks. The company publicly apologized for the breach in May of that year and offered PSN users free games, but this wasn't seen as enough for some customers who sought a class action lawsuit. Basically, the reason for that is that Sony was offering games that everybody already owned, you know?
Mm.
Authorities in the UK also fined Sony £250,000, which is just under $400,000, for a serious breach of the Data Protection Act. Today's settlement, which has yet to be approved by a judge, offers plaintiffs benefits such as free PlayStation 3 and PlayStation Portable games. Oh, yeah, people really need that with a PlayStation 3. Free PlayStation 3 themes. Again, who cares? You want to get a new wallpaper for your computer? You know? Free subscriptions to PlayStation Plus, free subscriptions to the Music Unlimited service, and free SOE station cash. So basically, yeah, we're going to give you money, but you have to spend it with us. You know, claims made by those who didn't participate in PlayStation's Welcome Back package, this program in which Sony offered PSN members free games, as we just said, will be honored in a first-come, first-served basis, subject to an aggregate cap of $6 million. Claimants will be able to choose two separate benefit... Sorry. Claimants will be able to choose two separate benefit options or two instances of one PlayStation Network benefit option. Those who participate in the Welcome Back package, who did participate in the Welcome Back package, will be eligible to receive one game benefit, one theme benefit, or a PlayStation Plus subscription benefit. Participants will all be will also be honored on a first-come, first-served basis, so the aggregate cap of $4 million. Curiosity account holders who did not have a PSN account at the time of the intrusions are eligible to have one free month of Music Unlimited, which is currently cost $4.99 a month. So SOE claimants are eligible to receive $4.50 of station cash to be credited to the claimant's account. The final fairness hearing, in which a judge will assess the reasonableness of the outcome, will be held on May 1st, 2015. That is several months from now. That is an awful long time. You know,
that is legal. Yeah,
the legal system is really slow.
That's kind of disappointing news. I really would have just preferred, like, you know, a check for $20. I mean, come on.
Does this seem to you like a little slap on the wrist?
I'm not personally happy about it. I wouldn't go maybe so far as a slap on the wrist.
Well, you know, the thing
is, I mean, because it is a $250,000 loss. I mean,
well, even more than that, that's from the UK. For Sony, it's like 15.
Right, but what really does annoy me is that it's not like a financial hit. It's unactualized revenue, and there's a difference there, and that irritates me.
Now, the thing about this, which also irritated Jordan to no end, wasn't the fact that they had a data breach, because that happens. You know, I mean, yes, they built their PS3s with a back door, which allowed them to do this, but the problem was that Sony for a week acted like there was nothing wrong. You know, they didn't tell their customers what was going on. They just said, "Oh no, whatever." And then a week later, "Oh, by the way,
credit cards might have been hacked."
You know?
Yeah, this was like, I mean, this was like the credit card version of like the Oklahoma bombing. I mean, it was just like this major thing happened, and we're just going to pretend that everything's fine. It's like everyone can see there's a giant smoking crater on the next block. But the Sony guards are like, no, everything's fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah, but you see, people didn't even know.
We're just taking out the trash.
See, the thing is that people thought maybe it was just a maintenance problem, like, oh, PSN is down and they can't get back up. Or it's like...
And those were people who saw the smoke from the next town over. Let's be clear.
Yeah. Or, you know, they had no idea that their accounts had been hacked, you know? I mean, it happens with everybody, but usually when that happens... the job of the publisher or whoever is immediately to tell their customers, hey, listen, you know, we had an intrusion, change your passwords quickly.
Yeah, that was definitely a ball drop on the part of their public relations people.
Well, the PR, it wasn't the PR's decision though. It was Sony's decision.
Well, PR is part of Sony. Like the PR division of Sony should have handled that.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item, which is another caveat emptor. Go ahead, Paul.
Yogscast says, quote, "We have no obligation to canceled adventure game Kickstarter." And this comes to us from Gamasutra. While the games industry debates the ethics of Yog Discovery, YouTubers Yogscast have admitted that its 2012 Kickstarter for an open-world sandbox game called Yog Ventures has been canceled. Yogscast says in an email to Kickstarter backers that to develop Winter Cool Games, quote, "have stopped working on Yog's Venture, but this is actually a good thing. The project was proving too ambitious and difficult for them to complete with their six-man team." I will hold there for a comment later, the email adds. While this was Winter Cool's project, we put a lot of time, energy, and effort into trying to help them realize their dream. Since we heard the news, we've been working hard behind the scenes to make sure that you still get awesome stuff and cool experiences. As noted by Eurogamer, the group later tells backers that Yogscast was, quote, under no obligation to do anything. Instead, we're trying to do our best to make this right and make you really glad you backed this project. Making this right, apparently, includes giving backer access to a different game, Tug, an open-world survival game that is currently in development. As noted by Eurogamer, Tug developer Nerd Kingdom has signed an agreement with Yogscast to be partners on the project. The original Kickstarter saw almost 14,000 backers, providing $568,000 in pledges. At the time of this writing, some backers were not particularly happy with the Tug compensation they were being provided.
Okay, so I'm gonna let you go off on this because you're...
So not that I'm going to go off on
this. I don't mean go off. I just mean, you know, you have more of a perspective than on this thing.
I really, really do. And quite frankly, you know, the perception is that anybody can be a game designer. And that might be true, but it does require, you know, some level of natural talent, some level of training, something. Like my uncle, I love my uncle, but he's constantly trying to pitch me a video game. And the conversation basically goes, hey, Paul, you know, be a great idea for a video game. What's that, Uncle Peter? Hercules is a great idea for a video game. They've been telling that story for thousands of years. I'm like, yes, they have. Anything else? It's like, nah, just make a Hercules video game. That'll be great. We hear that a lot.
Wait a minute, wouldn't Disney make a Hercules game? I mean, they do have
They've made a video game based on their version of the Hercules story. But that's kind of what I'm talking about, is that, you know, it's kind of easy to throw out a high level, hey, it's this high level, you know, open world Yogsverse thing. But frankly, a designer should have been able to pare down the design of this particular project to a very core element, the most intrinsic loop. And if they were over budget and under time, you should be able to cut irrelevant features. Like, I don't really understand why they couldn't do that, unless, you know, they're just really bad designers.
You know,
or they couldn't get out of their own way for some other reason that they're not disclosing.
Well, here's the thing. One thing that gamers have to understand is when you're an investor, if a project fails, you're shit out of luck. That's it. You know, you don't get your money back. Issue. That's the risk. And you know what? When you do something like a Kickstarter, that is the risk. You know, you have to. What's it called? They may not be able to do it. I mean, not all projects are filled to completion. And you know what? As an investor, you took a gamble, and that gamble didn't work out. You know.
And you know, like, sad as you know, as much as we want to believe in the digital artisanal revolution that is, you know, these Kickstarter-esque type things, all these other crowdfunding services.
Well, you know, the thing
you're not just investing in the idea creatively, you are investing in the business ability of those people to make that idea happen.
Well, here's
the thing. Sometimes people don't know themselves well enough.
Well, here's the thing is that crowdfunding is, you know, it's not new. I mean, you know, what Kickstarter and these other crowdfunding things have done have just made it more accessible and easier to do. But there's always been developers looking for people to help them back their game. You know, but
right.
Usually those people have been people who are more well off, you know, and, you know, can donate in the, say, six figures rather than, you know, a gamer who's going to contribute two or three figures, you know?
Right. You know, it's a really similar thing to that TV show Shark Tank.
I don't watch it.
So basically inventors, company, you know, small company owners have reached a certain level where they need a backer. And they go in front of this panel of like five, you know, self-made investors when they pit, you know, they make a pitch for their product or their company, and they, you know, with a request for a particular amount of money in exchange for a portion of their company. And the sharks or the investors either, you know, offer them something or they don't. And oftentimes it's amazing if you watch an episode of this program that even if the idea is brilliant, if the person who has the idea doesn't know what to do with it, the thing's going to tank.
Right.
So it's kind of a really similar situation here. The sharks are business savvy people who can spot whether or not the idea holder can go in that right direction. Whereas with crowdfunding and Kickstarter, you know, many individuals who are just, you know, tossing aside $5 or $10, you know, to help get these things funded, we don't, A, have those skills to pick out on those businessy features, businessy qualities of these inventors, or B, take the time or the available resources to research all of that stuff. You know, there's, you don't just throw money around and call it investing. Like, that's gambling.
Yeah, and the thing that people have to understand, this is not a pre-order. You're not pre-ordering a game.
You're, right, and, you're oh, and I definitely, yeah, and I've definitely been guilty of this. Like, I've viewed some game Kickstarters as pre-orders. It's like, oh yeah, they'll totally do this, and then, you know, they just didn't.
Which is why people, you know, the biggest Kickstarter games are by known quantities. You know, so you know, Obsidian, you know, and the guys did Wasteland, and Richard Garriott. These people, you know, got their projects funded because people knew who those people were, and they right, have a very high opinion. You know, they know that they're gonna probably get this done. You know,
and they knew exactly what they were going to do with the money because they had the expertise already.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, there are some games, you know, I've backed smaller games and I've been rewarded for it. Like this game, which is basically a cat themed puzzle quest, you know, sort of thing in which you're a cat and you're flying a ship and you fire at other cats. And you know, it's what's it called? It's fun, you know, and it wasn't that big. It was a smaller project, you know, and that's why sometimes I think, you know, Indiegogo might be a better source than Kickstarter, because Indiegogo does smaller games, but these, you know, it seems like Kickstarter is the big hot thing. So it's sort of like Indiegogo's for those who are really serious and have, say, already completed half their project and they just need completion funds. You know, they don't go with concepts. They actually have something that they've been working on and they say, you know what? I need help to finish this.
Yeah, it's sad, but they're kind of right that, you know, they don't really have an obligation. You invested.
Yeah. I mean, they did, you know, they did hook up with another developer who already has their game coming up, you know, and it's a similar game. Now, the only difference I see is one is an open world sandbox, which is based on the YouTube channel. And the other one is an open world survival. And I'm wondering if people are having a problem with the, because open world survival is basically something like Rust, in which it's like the Wild West and someone may just kill you for spite, you know, or something like that. So, you know, but it's a similar enough game. They're trying to get, you know, they're trying to replace one thing with another, you know, say, well, these guys didn't work. These guys have a better product and they're closer to finishing it, you know, and it may not be exactly what you backed, but it's similar enough, hopefully, that you will enjoy it, you know.
I don't know. I was not, in its inception, as wary of Kickstarter as I have become, but I kind of think, well, it's like, you know, you pays your money, you takes your chances.
You know, it's reality, though. I mean, it's investing. It's not pre-ordering, it's investing.
It's not, though. It's gambling.
Investing is gambling.
Do a lot more.
Really?
No.
It's no more, because with real investing, it's gambling if you don't do the research.
Right, but then that's not investing, that's gambling.
But, you know, that's why you have to research the underlying Kickstarters.
Right. There is an underlying assumption of having the knowledge at your disposal or the research skills to make an informed decision. Otherwise, it's just gambling. And unfortunately, Kickstarter isn't investing. For most people, it is gambling.
Well, for most
based on a very emotional concept. You know, oh, I like that game. I think it sounds cool. Here's money. It's like, oh, I like the idea of a Big Mac. Here's money.
I mean, sometimes one Kickstarter project that I backed had to be canceled because the person who was running it had a lot of personal issues and he offered anybody who wanted their money back, they could have it back, you know. And I said, no, you could keep it. I'll just patiently wait to see if you can get this done. You know, my money isn't so, you know, I was encouraging them, listen, you know, get your life sorted out and maybe you can come back to this when you can, you know. So, I mean, other people got their money back. I decided, no, you keep it. Just keep trying when you get a chance.
And you know what? I'll bet you that the people who did take that guy up on his money back offer were far fewer than we would originally think.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people said, no, keep the money and we'll just wait.
Yeah.
So, by the way, this reminds me, we talked about other Kickstarter things for 3D printers. And now Motley Fool has started talking. Now, Motley Fool, for those who don't know, is an investment service, which is sort of like off the beaten path, but they're very, very accurate. They've been talking about 3D printing as a bigger revolution than we thought it would be, and that it might even bring China to its knees because of production here rather than there, you know? So it was kind of big talk. So I'm interested to see if 3D printing is going to be really that big. Although I will admit, you know, I'm starting to get curious and maybe get a 3D printer for myself sometime.
I would have to wait and see. I mean, I've kind of grown beyond the age of collecting tchotchkes. and you know, as soon as I figure out a more practical application for it,
but said your apartment is so cluttered that you don't want to have more stuff in there anyway.
Exactly. But I definitely could see a 3D printer someday being the kind of thing that there would be, like, maybe not one in every home, but one in every apartment building.
How about this? How about one in every business?
One in every business? Yeah, I mean, well,
I mean, no, I mean, you go to a corner store, right?
Because then it'll be like, you know, a color printer where people always take advantage of their employer and print out color stuff.
No. I mean,
like,
service,
I could definitely see it like being a amenity for a housing complex or an apartment building.
Yeah.
You know, the same way that like a laundry room is an amenity.
No, but I'm thinking about, you know, and it's not like a Xerox copier where everybody has access, you know. You go to the business and you give them the file or whatever and they
print
for you.
That I can kind of see, because, you know, the building would have more purchasing power to get, you know, the needed plastics, et cetera, et cetera. I think that might be where the next stage of it would go.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Oh, wait,
it's my turn.
Oh, okay,
you just did the Yogs thing. Warner Brothers,
yeah, and I made it through that without stumbling very much, by the way.
Yeah. Warner Brothers nabs Space Invaders film rights. This comes to us from Games Industry Biz.
Wait, is that the one we're on?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're okay. Never mind.
Chalk up another arcade legend with silver screen aspirations. The Wrap is reporting that Warner Brothers has acquired the rights to make a film based on Taito's classic Space Invaders. Details about the plot or stars have yet to materialize, but the production companies have been set. Akiva Goldsmith and his Weed Road will work with Joby Harold and Tori Tunnel's Safehouse Pictures to adapt the arcade game. The thing about Akiva Goldsmith is that, yeah, he won the Oscar for A Beautiful Mind, but everything else he's written has been absolute crap. You know.
Well, that's your personal opinion.
No.
Finish reading the copy, okay.
Anyways, more recently produced, wrote, and directed Winter's Tale, which debuted in theaters earlier this year. Harold was the executive producer on this summer's Edge of Tomorrow, which Tunnel wrote and directed, the 2007 thriller Awake. I have still not seen Edge of Tomorrow. Everybody keeps on raving about it. Space Invaders is far from the only vintage game property that Hollywood has attempted to bring to the big screen. Rights to make films based on Asteroids and Missile Command were also acquired in the past, though those projects were never actually materialized. You watch Futurama?
No.
There was this one episode in which Fry wondered what if life was like a video game, and Lur came attacking with the Space Invaders, and he said, "Go down, reverse direction. Okay, now go down one rank, and again, reverse direction." You know, he kept on doing that each time over. That's what happens in my head when I think of a Space Invaders movie.
Yeah, I my reaction to this news is can be summed up in one word: battleship.
Yeah, I mean, Space Invaders.
I mean, it's just going to be spaceships shooting at each other.
Yeah, what is the distinctive part about Space Invaders? It's going to be all done
in indigo and orange. There's going to be fire.
Yeah, but for it to
I've already seen this movie.
For it to be Space Invaders, to be Space Invaders without just being just yet another alien invasion movie, you have to have the ships staying in midair and coming down row by row, and people in farmhouses firing cannons up at them, these mobile cannons. There's no other. Otherwise, what makes it different than, say, War of the Worlds? The Steven Spielberg version, I mean.
But that's entirely my point.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, You know, I like.
Oh, I know what it's gonna have. It's gonna have the score. Dun 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 dun.
No, you're thinking of Jaws.
No, that was the music to Space Invaders. Dun dun. Well, actually, that was also the music to Asteroids too. Except Asteroids was.
As lovely as your musical renditions are.
Yeah. But you know, yeah. So
God.
Here's a question.
The problem is the Lego movie was done really well.
Yeah, but
and it's just like what other thing can we grab? Well, and now
you know what? I'm just wondering, and why hasn't there been a live action Zelda film ever been considered?
Because Nintendo's smart.
No,
I mean, for example, like.
I'm not talking about Super Mario Brothers here.
Because they tried it and it failed.
They did?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, look at Mario Brothers.
No, but the thing is that Mario Brothers was never a good... That wasn't a very good story to transpose. With Zelda, you'd have Link with his sword and his costume running and fighting monsters that, you know... In Super Mario Brothers, you had to justify a lot of weird stuff.
Right. The point is that someone's going to get involved with the project, and for reasons of their own, they're going to fuck it up. I mean, look how excited people got when they announced that there was going to be a Gem in the Holograms movie. And then 30 seconds later, everyone was like, oh, you're making this for $5 million with three dudes in less than a month?
Well,
your first promotional poster looks like crap. Are you kidding me?
You know what?
I mean, that movie might as well be dead.
I think the Gem movie already came out. It was called Spice World.
No, the Spice World was at least about something. That was at least campy, trashy fun. This won't even be campy, trashy fun.
That's just what I mean, though. If you wanted to see a Gem movie.
Because these dude bros missed the point.
I'm just saying, if you wanted to see a Gem movie, I think Spice World is the way to go.
No, I mean, here's my prediction about the Gem movie. This is just my own personal supposition.
We're doing a lot of tangents this podcast.
But they're all fantastic. They're all gold, goddammit. You know, they're going to... Jerrica was all, you know, was a successful businesswoman, and she was also a secret rock star. So she was she brought that same empowered movement to her, you know, mindset to her alternate princess persona. Right. And she was a role model. They're gonna reimagine, you know, and I've seen the casting. So they've clearly reimagined her as some 16-year-old who doesn't know who she is yet. And
so in other words, they're trying to turn her into Sailor Moon, is what they're saying.
I'll bet you she's going to be painfully shy.
Like I said,
I'll bet you like in a sex tape esque, you know, move that like, oh, she made a video that accidentally got released onto YouTube, and oh no, now she's a star and she just doesn't know what to do.
Well, basically, you're saying she's going to be turned into Sailor Moon. Is that what you're saying?
No.
It sounds like Sailor Moon, or just turn her into a teenager.
That sounds nothing. You sound almost as bad as the dude bros making the film. That's nothing like Sailor.
But that's
Moon.
What I mean.
You sound horrible.
I never watched Gem though.
Right, but
I mean, I've seen it.
You're basically saying, oh, it's like Sailor Moon.
That's what they're trying to turn it into.
No, they're not trying to turn it into Sailor Moon. They're trying to turn it into the Hunger Games, but they've never seen the Hunger Games. So they're fucking it up, basically.
I haven't seen The Hunger Games either, but I don't want to.
I can't have this conversation with you.
No, I watch other movies, okay? I have different, you know, different desires.
Right, which
I really enjoyed How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Which is why you would have no business making a Gem movie, which is why they have no business making the Gem movie, which is why these people have no business making a Space Invaders movie.
Well, I mean, we'll see.
So, it's going to be just like Battleship. It's going to be just like Battleship. We're all going to have a collective.
But here's a question. When did Battleship ever involve aliens? What's, you know?
Oh, what do you want to bet that Space Invaders is nothing but nautical battles? You're going to have fun editing this later.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Here's a report. PC and console markets will decline. What? Seriously, is that what the copy says? Report, PC and console market will decline. This comes to us from Games Industry Biz via Captain Obvious. New generation of game consoles and booming category of free-to-play PC games won't be enough to keep the market growing indefinitely. According to a Juniper Research report, the market will soon turn south, falling from 46.5 billion worldwide this year to 41 billion in 2019. Despite that 12% drop, the PC and console segment will still account for more than half of all gaming revenues through 2019. Additionally, Juniper said software sales on PC and console, quote, will remain relatively healthy, with PC revenues topping those of the console counterparts. The PC and console games, trends, opportunities, and vendor strategies 2014 through 2019 report also predicts the console cycle to continue as in generations past. This means new systems will spark sales in the short term, with growth slowing and then turning negative as the new platforms age. Juniper also expects that another generation of consoles will likely be arriving around 2019, with the new platforms having a similar lifespan to their predecessors. Declining gaming handhelds will continue to play a part in the industry, with Juniper penciling them in for about $2.2 billion in revenue in 2019. Handhelds were not included in the console/PC figures above. While cloud gaming is going to receive a boost this year with the launch of PlayStation Now, it won't upend the status quo just yet. Juniper expects the cloud gaming market to rise from 281 million this year to 1 billion by the end of 2019.
Okay. So
I don't even know where to begin with these people.
Well, begin.
Let's examine the construct of what they mean by decline. I can't even.
Well, I think by decline they just mean actual users, not money, because that's inflation, you know. The money will go up because it's inflation, you know.
Look, the point is consoles aren't going anywhere.
No,
people
they
are still
didn't
making
say that.
Money out of it. It's like gasoline. Gasoline isn't going anywhere. Yes, we can make electric cars, but they're not either as profitable, or the people who are already in positions such as, you know, car manufacturers and oil companies just aren't, you know, they have more resources and they're not going to let that transition happen anytime soon.
Well, they are. You see, the thing about the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 is that they are built to do free-to-play games now. I mean, the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 weren't built for freebies, you know. For free games, you know, free-to-play games or MMOs or stuff like that. So I think that is going to I think that is what they're focusing on right now, because they talked about free games on PC as well, you know, and they're talking about how, you know, and I think Humble Bundle is probably a part of this, in which you can buy 12 games for $6 or something like that, you know, and good games too, not just, you know, indie games. I wonder where the technology will be around 2019.
We'll all be flying around in our jets and cars.
No, well, you know, next year we're supposed to have hover cars. Back to the Future said so.
2015
is next year.
I can't even take you people seriously anymore.
But 2015 is next year.
And are we living in Walt Disney's imagined future of Tomorrowland? That was supposed to happen in 1980.
Yeah, you know, there was a movie called The Phantom Planet, which talked about the future. And, you know, he said in March 18th, 1980, and Crow says, yeah, oh, our old future.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I can't.
So anyway,
I think Professor McGonagall said it best when she said that, you know, divination is a very woolly branch of magic.
Anyway, we do have listener feedback. And let's see. The first one is from Alpha Shard. Hi, guys. Great episode. This is from the episode from 2 weeks ago, I believe. At Noriega Sues. Yeah, I thought Jordan and I thought like Jordan that generally former dictators are dead ones. He should be just happy to made it to 80. I don't know if you weren't around for this, but Noriega, you know, from Panama, is suing EA for his likeness in the game for portraying him as a villain, you know. Yeah, Manuel, that's because you were a villain.
Satire laws. Moving on.
Well, no, but the thing is, it went beyond that. And by the way, the same thing with Lindsay Lohan. it goes beyond the satire laws there as well.
Isn't political propaganda also protected speech?
Yeah, I mean, you know, but the thing is that this is more of a public figure in which he was a major public figure, and he can be portrayed because he's a historic figure, you know?
Right, and that's part of the, you know, that's part of the trade-off that happens when you become a public figure, whether you intend or realize it or not.
And they didn't really get into his personal life. They just said, hey, you're a dictator and you're doing these things, you know? So, yeah. It's part of the public record. At Sims 2 Ultimate Edition, my wife and I both got our CD versions redeemed for the Ultimate Digital version. And I have to say, I'm pretty happy to access all those packs and expansions I never bought. I still find myself spoiled for some mods, and I had to tinker with special settings to get a resolution other than 800 by 600. It's nice to play this game digitally and not have the hassle of some 20 CDs to go through when wanting to install the game to a new computer. I don't know if it's nostalgia glasses or not, but I swear the game looked better than when I started up in Ultimate Edition. Now, do you know this, in which people who own the Sims 2 and they registered on Origin, EA released it, everything? You know, every single expansion ever released for the game, and gave it to them for free.
Well, that was very nice of them two consoles ago.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be like, hey, here's this free NES game.
I remember you, and he's referring to me because I said this, mentioning in regards to Sims 2 not liking that your Sim ages while a neighbor doesn't, so you'd have to go to their lot to age them. For me, it's the inverse in what they do in The Sims 3. I like to jump from lot to lot, controlling multiple families and creating dynasty legacy families. I don't like it in The Sims 3 if I'm playing a family and went to another house only to find the first family had moved, split up, or had a baby without me. So this happened to my wife, who was trying to get one of her Sim with someone else, and she went to another house, and when he came back, he was gone. He had moved out. So for me, it was like rabbit holes or hamster cages. If you couldn't tell, I like gameplay that allows me to have a good controlling of the lives of these mere digital blips on my computer. See, but that's just the thing. I just want to concentrate on my household and not everyone's household. You know, I don't want to have a friend who remains age 5 while my character's 40.
You know? Right. I mean, there's some people who would prefer playing with a, you know, one specific home in mind, and there are other people who prefer playing with an entire neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I
never really got, you know, I'm on your side, dude. I never really got past like the individual home either. Yeah. I always just made me and my perfect home. And quite frankly, I would really have loved to be like, here's my sister, go put her somewhere in the neighborhood and let her visit me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing is that for me, it's like having a single household, but in a dynamic world in which everybody's doing something out there. You don't know what it is, but it's happening. You know, I don't want to have to keep on going from household to household just to see them age and all that stuff. And, you know, whatever. I don't have that kind of time. I mean, if you want to, you know.
You know, I think that it would be really fun to play like The Sims Dynasty Edition, where it would really be like you had your main protagonist character, let's say, I don't know, yourself, and you just got to like put in all the other households, you know, in your family or in a family, and let them go be their own thing. Pick which house they live in your neighborhood so that they could come visit you or whatever. And if you wanted to make your neighborhood that way, that would kind of be awesome. But other than that, like only be restricted to your main protagonist house.
Now, something that's happened since is that EA announced that for people who own The Sims 3, they'll be getting a free item for the main game and each expansion that they own in the game, you know, in which I think for Sims 3, there's a special rabbit statue. And say if you own the Sims 3, this expansion, you get this item. If you own this expansion, you get this item, you know, so on and so forth, so that you, you know, depending on the expansions that you own, you get special items, you know. So
basically, it sounds like what this is a customer loyalty program.
Yeah, basically.
Because many people have been with the franchise since the beginning. So let's, you know, especially it's been, you know, almost 20 years now. You know, let's get those people back into the Sims franchise because, you know, we're launching a new title. And quite frankly, the experience that they've always wanted to have is something they now can have.
Well, fortunately, the Humble Bundle that I bought from EA, which included Sims 3, I already had the Sims 3, but the EA bundle also included two expansions. So
yeah, I got that as well. You know, one of my design mentors worked on The Sims 2. I wonder if she knows about this.
Probably. The reason why they're giving away The Sims 2, by the way, is that they're ending support for it, active support for it. So
look at that. Wow, really? It's still being supported?
It was released in 2003, I think, or 2002, 2003. So,
wow,
you know,
it's 10 years.
2004. I'm pretty sure it's 2004. But you know, the thing is that, you know, it's, you know, they're not ending support. You know, you used to be able to upgrade patches and all that, and they'll still have people who are able to answer your questions, but they're not going to have active support anymore. Like, you know, if it's a problem they don't have, well, they're going to shrug their shoulders and say, oh, well. Or if it's not compatible with Windows 8 or 9, whatever OS Microsoft's coming out, they're going to say, oh, well. By the way, this is not in the news, but Microsoft, apparently, from inside sources, says that they're going to be treating Windows 8 like Windows Vista. They're trying to erase memory of Windows 8 when they come out with their new OS. You know, it's sort of like, wasn't a very good thing, you know.
See, and this is why you cannot pry XP out of my cold, dead hands.
Okay, moving on. At Codemasters Respond, yeah, people need to realize that giving money to companies promotes them to make more of what you're buying. Vote with your wallets, people. This is why I backed Pillars of Eternity, to show my support for the games I want to play. By the way, I backed Pillars of Eternity for $140.
And you know what, this really, you know, I've been saying vote with your wallet for decades now, and quite frankly, it really is the best anti-pirating statement that you can give. You shouldn't steal games because it's wrong or that other people aren't getting paid. You shouldn't steal games because if you give games money to the games that you play, people will keep making them. I mean, look at Candy Crush.
Well, also,
how many variations of that same mechanic are they going to do because people kept giving them money?
The opposite is true too. You know, if no one's buying the game because they're all pirating, they're going to say, what's the point of making this game if I can't make any money from it?
Exactly.
You know, at X Call of Duty found new studio to make more free person. Call of Duty found new studio to make more first person shooters. Like, we need that. I don't think people are going to want to play with a big headgear thing on their head. I'm sure they'll make a game with a ninja, mutant, zombie, Nazi, robotic terrorist for all the kiddies to play. Okay, bored with that. Next topic. At Adam West playing himself, I've been entertained by his role of being quote unquote himself, like in Family Guy. I appreciate when an actor embraces the role that made him famous as opposed to being resentful about it.
Ooh, I can also appreciate any kind of individual, especially celebrities, who are able to laugh at themselves like that. I mean, Patrick Stewart. I mean, they're able just to, you know, roll with the punches.
That's how Neil Patrick Harris rebounded, because he made fun of himself in a big way in Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
Right.
And his career skyrocketed.
Oh, exactly. Oh my God, NPH is all the way.
Yeah. At Civ Beyond Earth, I'm looking forward to playing this game. I'll probably be a Harmony since you get sandworms. I look forward to assimilating Dan with the Mother Brain flower. If you say Mother Brain, all of a sudden I start thinking about Levi Stubbs playing that Mother Brain in Captain N, the Game Master.
I start thinking of the sacrifice of the baby Metroid and I cry. You bastards.
Sony Remakes, yeah, I'm not sure about remakes for PS3. Now, if they make remake PS1 or PS2 games, then might interest me. Namely, Sudoken. I need more Sudoken. Sudoken? Sudoken.
Yeah, I definitely think that remakes kind of, you know, there's kind of a time when it's too soon. But moving on.
At Spore, install Spore and see if I like it again. That's what I said. See, that's just an incorrect statement. That game is completely unlikable.
You know, I never got a chance to play Spore because I was in grad school when it came out, and I was just like neck deep in it. But I'd heard nothing about good things. So
here's the thing:
surprises me.
The first two stages, and first when you're an amoeba, and then when you're an animal, they're pretty okay. The problem is that here's one thing: when you're an animal, you know, it doesn't matter if you can eat at all. Hmm. You only need to eat to heal yourself. So you could literally have your creature evolving without ever munching on a single thing, you know?
Well, photosynthesis.
I mean, there's different ways. A photosynthetic animal?
Yeah, why not?
Anyways,
it's a video game.
The thing is that, you know, and this was discussed a long, long time, years ago on this podcast. I don't know if you were here for it, but there were two sides in the developer that Will Wright was running to make Spore. One was the fun side and the other was the scientific side, and the fun side won out, in which it's, and I think
fun should people, always win.
No, but here's the thing. I don't mean fun. I mean more like unrealistic, right? And then you had the scientific. And a lot
of
people...
Well, which one was more fun? Scientific is often not fun.
Well, the fun side won out, but the thing is that the game wasn't fun because it wasn't scientific enough, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if that's the reason.
No, it was the reason. You haven't played S'more. Come on.
No, I don't know. I don't know if the reason a game isn't fun is because it isn't scientific enough. I mean, just that statement right there makes me want to cringe.
No, the thing is that... Well, here's the thing is that one of the things that was stressed about S'more, and the thing that a lot of people got interested in S'more, was that you were going from amoeba to animal to civilization, all that stuff. And when he was demoing it for people, and if you'll see the old demos, it was really fascinating because it was gritty and, you know, maybe scientific, more like gritty and realistic, right? And it just had that feel. And then when you play S'more now, it's sort of like, it doesn't feel, you know, it doesn't feel like
fun.
Fun is highly subjective. It doesn't. Mm. It feels light. It feels too light. You know, like there's not enough there. Like they skimped on stuff. That's what it just feels like. It feels like they skimped on stuff.
I'll let you have the last word on that.
Well, you haven't played it, so.
Well, I mean, I'm being gracious.
Yeah. At the question of the week, I think I'm looking forward to Pillars of Eternity the most, since it's a spiritual successor to Baldur's Gate, which I want more of. I am also looking forward to Civ Beyond Earth, as well as multiplayer for my Polycast Craft friends. My family is looking forward to Little Big Planet 3. My wife wants Sim 4, but I'm very cautious of it. I don't like the buy the next expansion pack merry-go-round with Sims 2 and 3. I have to admit, I am tempted by Dragon Age Inquisition as well. I really enjoy open-world gameplay and not being handheld or railroaded from point A to Z. I also like taking my time and savoring the game. Obviously, this game was the question of the week was, what game are you looking forward to the most this coming fall? So, Paul, here's your chance to answer the question of the week.
I'd like to say Kingdom Hearts 3, but it's not. I'd like to,
well,
but I can't.
Impossible because Kingdom Hearts 2.5 Remix is coming out this fall, and they're not going to release 3 at the same time as that.
Slit my wrists.
You don't want the same thing over again. You just want...
No, I just let's get to the next number, please.
You have any
I don't know. I'm honestly not really excited by anything this Christmas season.
Okay.
So, I mean, and having been to E3, that's kind of sad.
Well, like I said, it's a new console cycle. I think next year is going to be when we're going to have the stuff that we really want.
Right, so it's basically, you know, the economy sucks. Let's all just, you know, make it through another Christmas, and next year will be better.
Well, there are games I'm really interested in next year, this coming fall. You know, it's just not the deluge. Actually, I don't know if that's a bad thing. Actually, I'm glad it's not a deluge, because when you have too many good things, it's like, when am I going to find the time to play any of this stuff? I just want one
but I'd rather be
occupy all my time.
I'd rather have that problem than waiting around for another, you know, for another windfall.
Well, you know. I know that, you know...
Like, can't we have another Mario?
Well,
like,
here's a question.
Give me something to work with.
Do you think the Kid Icarus, the game that was released, killed Kid Icarus for the foreseeable future?
The one for 3DS?
Yeah.
Because it was on a troubled platform?
Well, I wouldn't say 3DS is a troubled platform. I'm just saying the game was really bad, and I'm...
It launched on a troubled platform. It really didn't carry the spirit of the original. They over...
But I'm just saying, you think... they're ever going to make another one is the question, because it took a long time for them just to make that one.
That's like asking me if I think they're going to make another Dungeon Keeper or System Shock game.
Well, they keep on making Dungeon Keeper type of games, but they still haven't hit, I know what you're thinking, you know, what you consider the magic of the original theme. You know, basically Dungeon Keeper is theme dungeon, right? Like in this thing of theme hospital and theme park, you know, basically Dungeon Keeper was theme dungeon. And, you know, I don't know of any people who have actually recaptured the magic of those games either, of theme hospital. You know,
well,
I can see in my head.
Because they get caught up in trying to recapture the narrative as opposed to the mechanics.
Yeah.
Again, another common mistake that people who aren't game designers make.
I just keep on hearing the nurse saying, there's a patient coming in with bloaty head. Anyways, so this question of the week is an interesting one because what I did was I did the question of the week, and then I explained why I was bringing up that question of the week. So go ahead, Paul. do the question of the week.
Okay, here's a new bit of formatting for me. Question of the week. Do you think consoles will start doing early access on games? In a recent interview with Gamasutra, Sony publisher and developer relations VP Adam Boys said finding a smart way to give players access to games that aren't finished yet is, quote, one of the massive conversations we're having internally. One of the major barriers, he said, is making the development state of the game clear to potential purchasers. Quote, we don't want somebody to stumble across that title and expect a full product and have a negative experience. On the Microsoft side, ID at Xbox manager Chris Carla.
Charla.
Charla.
I said you said Carla.
Well, that's you. Chris Carla told developer that a similar early access scheme on Xbox consoles is, quote, something developers have been asking for, and we're listening really closely to developers. While stopping short of a new program announcement, he noted that developers can already release private betas on Microsoft systems as a way of getting unfinished titles out there. Do I think consoles will start doing early access on games? Quite frankly, I think that really anything's possible, especially as, you know, look, the rush in, you know, the gold mine of video games has kind of ebbed. So now with more people out there and each individual company able to get less and less of the money, executives are looking much more closely at the progress an individual title is making. So it might become a smart business decision to release alphas, to release proof of concepts, and get mass feedback in the information age.
Well, basically what they're saying is people paying for a game that's not ready yet, you know, and just playing the beta or the alpha or whatever. I think it's just a matter of time, and I think Microsoft is desperate enough to cater to indie developers that they'll start doing it with indie titles.
While I'm not saying that they will, I'm saying that I really wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I think Sony's a little bit more resonant because they have their PlayStation Plus, and they want to, you know, they want to have control over everything, and they don't
want.
Well, I mean the
free to play business model has and is continuing to burn everybody. So we have to find that next business model.
Yeah.
You know, in the same way that we went from arcades to consoles. We've gone from consoles to free-to-play and mobile. So now we need to find the next business model that's going to work for modern technology.
Yeah. So anyways, look for our show notes at Gaming Podcast. And, oh, wait. Actually, I should. So that's the question of the week. Do you think consoles will start doing early access on games? Let us know what you think. And, you know, we want to hear from you, especially since there are people who started speaking up that normally don't, you know, write in. So we want new people to write in. We want old people to write in, too. We want to hear some new voices. So if you're a new voice, feel free to write in. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net. Along with industry news and our gaming history articles, Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net. Along with industry news and our gaming history articles, we enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast, or the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum, or send us comments to @fans@GamingPodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at GameStudio.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments.
And, you know, hey, send me some personal notes because I like to feel appreciated.
Well, apparently you're sending personal notes to Hans Krebs. I mean,
he hasn't returned a single one of my crystal hearts. I'm very annoyed.
Oh, see? Now Hans Krebs has to write in and explain why.
Yeah, Hans. Celeste has given me the stink eye over here because I ain't giving her no crystal hearts.
Anyway.
What up, yo? Sweet Apple Inc. ain't going to freaking save itself now, is it?
And with that, from one brony to another, we will see you next week.
Bye, Bonds.